got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody we didn't hate for long enough. Let the good Lord reunite us to this country that we love's undivided.
Yeah. Welcome back.
You either go to church.
I don't want to belabor this. Welcome back to the second hour of today's Road Warrior radio broadcast this Tuesday, September 26, 2023. I don't want to belabor this, but man, it's so ironic. It's, you know, this is a cliche of history to see these things happening. And so I mentioned the Proverbs 31 woman in the last segment, the final segment of the first hour, and the description of her. And it's interesting, you know, again, I mean, you look at what we valued not that long ago in America and how the state, the nanny state, came to sort of replace the family. We used to pass things down traditionally, and it kind of sounded good, maybe in a certain context, to have home ec or whatever kinds of experiences in school. And then all of a sudden it got to the gender flipping stuff, but now we're not supposed to talk about gender. You could see where this was all headed really from the outset, especially if you were looking at who was putting this stuff together and why. That notwithstanding, it sounded, you know, okay. But really what it did was sort of supplant the tradition of passing these things down in the family. Ladies used to bake with mom and ladies in the family. Guys used to do similar things. You know, father and son would turn a wrench together under the hood kind of stuff. And, you know, in the Donna Reed era, shall we say, sure, things are not perfect. Life is not perfect. We live in a sinful, fallen world, but I would speculate that there was less schizophrenia and less loneliness and misery, generally speaking. But the irony is now you skip forward to there's so much emphasis placed on physical stuff, and it's getting worse and worse with the younger generation. Someone just commented about homecoming stuff. You know, why do the young ladies have to parade around, especially at, you know, formal events like this, homecoming, you know, with things on that are, the way that it was put in this particular conversation, things on that are so short that their hoo-hoos are sort of hanging out. That's the way that it was put in this conversation. And this was a lady. This was a grandmother. Why is that necessary? Is that really the message that you want to be sending? And so in the broader context of this discussion, where is the value? And who are we trying to send the message to? Again, you know, having a conversation with ladies that talk about all of this augmentation stuff, you know, augmenting my physical appearance. You know, I was saying, I can tell you all of this stuff, you know, as one friend puts it, you know, the more piercings, and it seems like the piercings and the tattoos and things are part of an addiction that feeds on itself. But, you know, you see the ladies with the studs in their nose and things. And I can tell you that for most guys, that's not attractive. And you tell women this, you know, all of this stuff, you know, one friend puts it this way. Oh my gosh, did you fall in your dad's tackle box? At some point, That's kind of how it starts looking. And it's not attractive to men. Probably, you know, maybe there's some person or some demographic, maybe that's attractive to, but is that really who you want? Is that the audience you want to attract? Is it really? But then again, you know, I think of the article that I've mentioned Michael Tessarian's article, Children of Thanatos, and the fact that the psychically mutilated people are completely incapable of seeing themselves as sick and wrong-headed, as he put it. It's just not possible, and he's right about that. So we come to a point in this society where some of the older ladies, the grandmothers, and people who remember back to a generation when men and women served some sort of a function in life and family and so forth, and now, you know, this weird society is giving us all these strange messages, and that we can just sort of, you know, like Lego, we can rebuild the world and we can just do whatever we want. But again, my question always with all of this stuff is, who's in charge, who decides? So we come to a point now where ladies are encouraged to believe that their physical appearance is their greatest value and their greatest, let's say, asset to exploit or to leverage or whatever. And as I said, talking to ladies, saying most of these things that we're talking about, you know, if you look like you have duck lips, that's not attractive to men. And it sends a particular message. This person finds this part of them to be a major part of their self-worth, which means that to me, for example, there's a lot lacking there somewhere else, in places that are important. But again, the point in saying, you know, talking to ladies about this is that I have heard from ladies that they're not doing it for men. I say it's not that's not generally attractive to men, as far as I know. Being one, for example, and talking to other men, this is anecdotal, not scientific, and they kind of think it through and say, yeah, but we're really not doing it for men. We're kind of competing with one another. What a sad statement that is. So, come in full circle now. Let's get to the Lego video that I mentioned. We'll probably play this over a couple of days. You know, it's long. Like I said, it's 36 minutes and change. But I think it's worth playing. And so, you know, where is this messaging coming from? Again, it reminds me of the telephone game. Are we talking to the ladies that buy into this nonsense in their 70s or 80s? And say, you know, what do you think? After you've gone through all of this, after you've lived this glorious Steinem kind of a life, and you're emancipated and free and all this kind of stuff, you don't need a man, and then you're going to carve up your face and other parts of you to compete with other women? Why? Now, you know, in your 70s or 80s, was it all worth it? Or do you feel sad and lonely and like maybe you bought into a lie? It seems to me that when I read Proverbs 31, that sounds like a much more fulfilling and sustainable, dare I say, life and lifestyle. Before we get to the video, I'll save this. I'll do this at the end of today's broadcast. Proverbs 31. There is an effort to really, well, to emasculate and to castrate men, for sure. You know, everything is construed as toxic masculinity. Defending You know, chivalry, oh my goodness, certainly that's toxic. Oh, we got to get rid of that. We shouldn't be defending women. Women can defend themselves. Sure they can. But you know what? Some ladies appreciate it. Some ladies appreciate a gentleman. And we sort of have that in us as ladies and gentlemen. There's something there. There's something that calls to us as ladies and gentlemen. I think it's why, again, I think why the you know, for golf, historically, it's been different. It's why the assumption was gentlemen for PGA. It's, you know, the Gentlemen's Professional Golf Association and the LPGA. It's not the WNBA. That's the Women's National Basketball Association. But the LPGA is the Ladies Professional Golf Association. It's different. And I don't know about you, but I notice the dehumanizing language that gets used, the male, the female. That's what we call, that's how we distinguish dogs and pets. But, you know, these days everybody thinks their pet is their, you know, an extension of the family. It's not, it's a pet. That's part of the dehumanizing language that's being inserted into our contemporary vernacular or lexicon. So that's a construct. That's the irony. Anyway, I'll get back to Proverbs 31. First, let's listen to some of this video. Again, it's, the video is titled The Hidden Meaning of the Lego Movie. The description reads, "Are you Lego-pilled?" Lego Movie 2014 is more than just an adventure story. It is a carefully crafted allegory that comprehensively contains an entire belief system. What is that belief system? Can we do that, please?
In this video, we're going to talk about the 2014 Lego Movie and how it's more than just a whimsical adventure story, but it's also a carefully crafted allegory for a worldview that its viewers may not expect.
This is Nathan Smith. Welcome to the symbolic
Lego world.
It's common for groups with different ideas to battle over the meaning of symbols and characters. The clearest example of this is in the world of meme creation. When a meme finds attention, different factions struggle to convey an interpretation that best portrays their ideas. If an interpretation taps into something that people agree with, it naturally gets spread and it becomes the meaning of the symbol. It continues to get reproduced and revised until collective society has so thoroughly explored the idea that they then move on to the next subject of attention. In some instances, an original artist may even lose control of their work and have it taken away from them and repurposed into something that they didn't intend or might even disagree with. The battle over the meaning behind symbols borrows from all facets of popular culture. As ideas latch themselves onto movie and television shows in order to have their understanding more widely realized,
throws him into the thing. I take off the mask.
Boy. But sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes a film will latch itself onto an even older idea or story. It may even attempt to reframe and repurpose the original story for its own motives, as it embeds and cements itself into the culture's understanding of a timeless story. And then it usurps its original meaning away from the ancient creator. There's no shortage of religious symbols that can be found all over popular culture from various different traditions. But some stories offer more than just a nod to a particular religion. The whole purpose of the story is to present a carefully crafted allegory that comprehensively contains an entire belief system. Handing out religious pamphlets or tracts traditionally used to serve this function. But in the modern world, what is a more effective method of proselytization than a blockbuster family-friendly movie? It's my belief that that's what the 2014 Lego Movie is. It's more than just an attempt to sell you more toys. It's an attempt to sell you on a worldview. It's a tract. And the question is, for which worldview? On its most basic surface level, the Lego story is about an ordinary Lego construction worker who is thought to be the special. He is recruited to join a quest to stop an evil tyrant from gluing the Lego universe into eternal stasis. But to go into the deeper meaning of the movie, We need to go back to one of the most ancient stories that the Lego Movie is mirroring, and we need to discuss how two different groups have interpreted that story completely differently. So it's not my intention to discuss whether the Garden of Eden is meant to be taken as a historical literal story or a figurative symbolic story or some kind of combination somewhere in between or both simultaneously. What we're going to discuss is how a person interprets the story, who they see to be the heroes and the villains, and who they're sympathetic to. If we can understand that, we'll have the key to understanding the worldview of the people who made the Lego Movie. So, most people are familiar with the biblical account of the Garden of Eden. You have a perfect, infinite God, and he's good. He creates the universe, he creates the material world, and he also creates the spiritual realm. He creates spiritual beings. And because he is good, what he creates is also good. And at the apex of his creation is humanity. The spiritual beings, they have free will. They can choose to accept their place as created beings of God, or they can reject and deny him and his status of God. You know, a third of them, they choose to reject God, and they're just like constantly coping. They're constantly trying to convince themselves that like they're as good as God and they could be like him if they wanted to, or that he's, you know, he's as bad as them. So in the Garden of Eden, mankind is given this choice to exercise their free will as well. Okay, that comes up in the idea of the forbidden fruit, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But humanity makes the wrong choice. Humanity decides to eat the apple, and this creates a separation between us and God. I guess it would be like this. So humanity is separated from God. They're separated from the source of life. And as a consequence of that, death enters the world, and everything in the material world is destined to decay and break down and one day die and be destroyed. And everything in the spiritual realm that falls on this side, because it's spiritual and it exists outside of time, when time ends, it will remain in this like perpetual state of destruction, if that makes sense. I think that's how it goes. So destruction eternally, forever. And humanity has a foot in both of these. We're both physical, material beings while we're alive, but we also are spiritual beings that have this capacity for eternity. It's just not being like exercised right now while we're in the confines of time. Or is it? So eventually, when time ends, all of this falls into here, okay? That's pretty brutal. And God, because he's perfect and just, he can't just allow things that are corrupted to enter and become a part of him and, you know, live in his house, so to speak. That wouldn't make him just, because the wrong things that we've done actually matter. Humanity choosing to do evil things, that's a big deal. It can't just be ignored. But in addition to God being perfect in justice, he's also perfect in love and mercy. So what he does is he enters into the material world, lives as a man, lives this perfect life, and people aren't too crazy about that. They don't like being told that they're wrong, so they murder him. He was also getting really popular, and the people who were in charge weren't crazy about that. So he gets murdered, but because he is the source of all life, that's not such a big deal for him. Well, it really sucks for him, because he does actually experience death. But he is able to overcome it. So he beats death, which was a uncomfortable thing for him, but it's really great for us. And he then goes back to heaven, goes back to the Father. And he tells everyone that if you give up like your selfish, self-interested life and you live how he said to live in the most sincere way that you are capable of, then when your material existence ends, instead of falling into destruction, you'll join him. And, you know, he's like, he'll be fair. So if you've never heard this before, he'll judge you in accordance to what you know. I feel like I should add that was his plan intentionally. He didn't just come down to earth and accidentally get killed by people. He knew what would happen, and he chose to suffer that anyway in order for us to have an opportunity to have what is wrong with us fixed. And regardless of whether a person agrees with this or doesn't understand it or thinks it's just completely foolish, either way, most people in the Western world have heard this explained to them in some form or another. But there's a completely different interpretation of this story that not a lot of people are aware of, and it's kind of been hidden. It's the same story, except for in this interpretation of it, God's the villain, and the serpent, he's the hero. Now, this other inverted interpretation of the story, it's harder to put your finger on because it's not like it has a canon of scripture. The whole idea behind it, the whole point of it, is that a person becomes their own ultimate authoritative source. So, like, they have authors that they would respect that were historically significant to them, but that doesn't mean that they agree. However, there is a sort of underlining doctrine that they seem to adhere to, and it presents itself in how they understand the Garden of Eden story. So in their interpretation, there is a God. So a God. And so maybe he's not necessarily infinite because he's just one among others. Maybe he's no different than what you could become like. And maybe he isn't good or loving. Maybe he is an evil tyrant. This kind of like relic of the past. He's old, outdated ideas that we're meant to evolve beyond. And, you know, he's jealously trying to prevent that from happening. And in this interpretation, since he's not good, what he creates, the material world, is also not good. It's a dilapidated work of art from a deranged being. And humanity can't be blamed for the things that they do wrong because it's his fault. So in this framework, humanity was never meant to have free will or intelligence or any capacity for creativity, like robots on autopilot who only exist to serve this evil being. And in this framework, there's spiritual beings as well. And one of these beings, like you could say it enters into a snake, or it motivates the snake, or it is the snake. That's a snake, by the way. It is the one to present humanity with creativity and free will and autonomy and intelligence, but only if humanity seizes it. And he says that, like, you know, you're going to surpass God because he's a prison. He's not as enlightened. So humanity accepts the offer and, you know, things have only been getting better since. And humanity is just going to keep progressing. It's going to keep going upward. And through, you know, moral progress and through the application of intellect through technology, we're going to, like, merge with machines and we'll become gods if we haven't yet realized that we are all already. That's what's ahead of us in this framework. And they believe that when we die, it doesn't actually mean anything. It either means nothing, or there's just a cycle of reincarnation and you get to try again. They believe that Christ never happened, or if he happened, he wasn't God, or didn't actually die, or didn't actually resurrect, or didn't actually take on flesh. It was just like some sort of illusion. Yet they will one day present their own counterfeit version of this, who will either unite all of humanity or enslave all of humanity, depending on how you look at it. The big takeaway is, like, who gets credit for mankind having creativity and intelligence and free will? Was that something that is our birthright, that was given to us from the start, and we chose to misuse it, and we can rectify that with another choice? Or did God never intend for us to have those things, and Lucifer smuggled it in so that we could escape all of this? Did the apple condemn us all to death, or does it allow us to all become gods? Now, finally, let's get to the Lego movie. And it's not going to be long before it's apparent which of these two stories it's telling. The film starts by introducing us to Lord Business and Vitruvius. They're fighting over an ancient relic called the Kraggle, which is described as a super weapon. Lord Business wins the encounter, but Vitruvius, who's a sort of hippie wizard, shares a prophecy that an extremely special person will come along, find another relic, and will lead an army to disable the Kraggle and save the entire realm. We're then introduced to our protagonist, Emmett. Emmett's only distinguishing feature is that he has no distinguishing features. He is purposefully bland, and he follows instructions for menial things to a T. We learn that Emmett and everyone around him lives in the same superficial world, where they're all fixated on the same repetitive one-liners and songs, and they all follow the same popular trends. Emmett is a common construction worker, and they live in a hyper-orderly society. They're told to take anything that's weird or doesn't follow the instructions and blow it up. We discover that Lord Business is the leader, and that there's a thin veneer that hides a totalitarian society.
Follow the instructions, or you'll be put to sleep. And don't forget, Taco Tuesday's coming!
Emmett is friendly and wants to be able to get along with everyone, but because he's so bland and unspecial, people largely ignore him, and he doesn't make friends because they all have gimmicks. Then Adam meets Eve, or rather, Emmett meets Lucy. And while he's following her, he discovers an object that's foreign to the Lego world. It's glowing as if it's pleasing to the eye. He steps over some instructions that tell him not to touch it, and he does anyway. This is very clearly the Lego version of the Tree of the Knowledge of Good and Evil, or the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden. When Emmett touches the object, he receives a download of visions of a world that exists beyond the Lego world, the real world, the human world. And the vision ends with a child speaking to him, saying the phrase, "It's your turn to be the hero now." So already we can see which of these two interpretations the story is going to fall into. When Emmett touches the object, it's not his fall, it's the first step in his ascension. It doesn't estrange him from God. It allows him to see him for the first time. He just doesn't understand it yet. Emmett wakes up with the relic stuck to his back. And we later learn that the Kraggle is just crazy glue. And the relic stuck to his back is just the lid. And I'm not sure if I'm reaching here, but the only pseudo-suggestive elements that I saw in the film revolved around this Kraggle.
You were found at the construction site convulsing with a strange beast.
That's disgusting.
And now Emmett has become the female end of what is meant to unite with something otherworldly. Next, Lord Business. His henchmen try and remove the piece from Emmett's back, but Lucy intervenes. We learn that Lucy is a master builder. And master builders are a kind of secret society of characters who are the only ones to possess creativity. And they go around building whatever they want without instructions out of anything they want. In the Lego world, this is an innocent enough idea. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't cut down trees in order to build homes. But in order to create, the master builders have to cannibalize and repurpose whatever's around them. The world doesn't contain any intended purpose or inherent reason for why it was created the way it was at all. Everything exists for them as pieces to just remove and replace however they want at their own whim. Throughout the entire movie, there are never any negative consequences of this. They only ever fail upward. They're only capable of improvement and progress, and they're never messing anything up. They're not destroying anything because at the bottom of it, destruction doesn't exist. They know better than their creator anyway. In contrast to that, Lord Business, or the Lord, wants to preserve the way that everything was designed forever. In the film, he wants to use crazy glue to make it so that pieces can't be pulled apart and that creations can't be destroyed. And his plan is going to come into effect in 3 days. Why does 3 days sound familiar?
Tear down this temple, and in 3 days I will build it again.
It becomes more clear in the latter half of the movie, but Lord Business is the manifestation of God in the Lego world. He is that world's God presented in their flesh. He's like a kind of Jesus Christ, except for he's absent any noble or redeeming qualities. We learn that Lord Business's office stands on infinity.
We gotta pause it. We gotta go to a break here in a second, but interesting stuff, don't you think? Did you really know that all of this was in a Lego movie? Stick around, we'll be right back.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It just was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around, and be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone, all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance.
Welcome back.
He's haunted by something he cannot define.
All right. So, let's see here. We're going to have to pause, probably. You have been listening to the video, The Hidden Meaning of the Lego Movie. We skipped the break. The last intended break, and we played an extended clip, about half of the 36-minute video, The Hidden Meaning of the Lego Movie. And you are hearing the correlation of the biblical story and the anti-biblical counterpart, which is, I would say, patently sort of Gnostic in nature. It's theosophical, I would say, in the description that's being given. And these two stories are being contrasted. What is the Epic of Gilgamesh really all about? Really, it's just that same old Hellenistic influence that's trying to seduce people into going along with the finishing of the great unfinished work that is represented in Genesis chapter 11, according to the builders. And again, that concept is pejorative in the New Testament. It's interesting, if you look in Masonic circles, they worship Solomon, they worship Hiram Abiff, and in 1 Kings 5:18, you read in the King James, "And Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders did hew them and the stone quarters, so they prepared timber and stones to build the house." But they're building the house of the Lord. That's what they're building. Ezra 3:10. "And when the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, they set the priests in their apparel with trumpets, and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with cymbals, to praise the Lord after the ordinance of David, king of Israel." But then you skip forward. What happened? Matthew 21:42, "Jesus saith unto them, Did ye never read in the scriptures, the stone which the builders rejected, the same is become the head of the corner? This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes." Have you ever read? Mark 12:10, "And have ye not read this scripture, the stone which the builders rejected has become the head of the corner?" Luke 20:17, "And he beheld them and said, What is this then that is written, the stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the head of the corner?" And this is, lest we wonder, this theme is repeated in Acts and 1 Peter, Acts 4:11, "This is the stone which was set at naught of you builders, which has become the head of the corner." And then 1 Peter 2:7, "Unto you therefore which believe, he is precious, but unto them which be disobedient." Are these the folks that are represented perhaps in the making of the Lego film? "Unto you therefore which believe, he is precious, but unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner." So it's interesting. If I didn't know better, I would think that most of the people that are revered in intellectual channels, why? Because, ye shall be as gods. We can decide for ourselves. These grandiose-minded people with God complexes, like George Soros types, who say, I mean, he has admitted in interviews, "I had a God complex." Bill Gates, too, these kinds of people. We can make the world as we see fit, like we're hearing described about the Lego movie. If I didn't know better, I would think that, all those people that are revered in intellectual circles and universities, the Carl Jungs, the Nietzsches, the Freuds, the William James types, the William Blake types, you read their background, the Karl Marxes. I mean, I've talked about this. Go look on Wikipedia. The vast majority of these folks are what the Bible calls those who have departed from the faith. They have some sort of an encounter, typically in their childhood, with some form of what some might consider Orthodox Christianity. They don't pursue it. They don't get rid of the traditions of man, which are doctrines of demons, and let that go, and then dive into the Bible and search the scriptures daily, like the Bereans, Acts 17:11, to see if these things be true. And, you know, invite the Holy Spirit into this experience so that they can fellowship with their Creator directly. Instead, they become these types that we hear about in, you know, Matthew 21:42, Mark 12:10, Luke 20:17, Acts 4:11, 1 Peter 2:7. The rebellious types, which reminds me of what Jesus said in John 8, you are of your father the devil. That's why you can't hear me. An interesting confrontation that really comes to a head finally. Why can't you guys hear me? You're of your father the devil. He is a liar and the father of lies. There's no truth in him. So, it's interesting. Are we being seduced into going along with the agenda of the what Saul Alinsky termed the first radical, the character he dedicated his book Rules for Radicals to? Sure seems like it. These people all have a very similar background that are celebrated and revered in universities. They are those who, generally speaking, have departed from the faith. And what does that portend? Let's go to the phones and grab Lark in Texas. Lark, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi, Chris. I hate to interrupt your narrative here, but I just had a few thoughts that might be beneficial to you and your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a book that was written in 1975 called Sociobiology, The New Synthesis, by E.O. Wilson. If you go to Nikki's old blog, search Living Outside the Dialectic and do the site search, just Lark, there's only one entry in there for Lark, because most of the time I post it as anonymous in the years that I used to post comments there. But basically what I shared with her that she printed was some correspondence I was having with the late Alan Watt of this network.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about meme theory and sociobiology. But that's it's interesting to note that that's now been relabeled as evolutionary psychology, as well as evolutionary biology. So I would invite you to take a gander at that sometime. The thing I remember about Meg Ryan, which I think endeared her to American males, I'm sure, was the scene where she is acting out an orgasm in a restaurant.
And Sleepless in Seattle, I think it was.
I'm sorry?
I think that was in Sleepless in Seattle, I believe.
Yeah. And, of course, that would have been... That would have resonated with me because I was living in Seattle at the time. But, yeah, and then somebody says, I'll have what she's having.
Right.
A nearby patron. That was really quite comical, that scene. So anyway, I want to wrap up by saying that that is a useful person to consider. And this thing, this term of art called sociobiology, there's another guy on this network that I think that would be useful for you to reach out to, and that would be Frederick Blackburn, who has a show on Saturday called Blackburn Nine's Saturday Snack Shack. He could lend a lot. I don't know if you are even aware of him, but he has an interesting story to tell, and he, of course, he talks about this pivot of history, the just as you do, same terms, the great work versus the great experiment, etc. But he refers to what you're talking about, and particularly as it relates to Hollywood, as slime mold. Mm-hmm. And I like that because it's simple. And, you know me, I haven't been to a Hollywood movie since 1986. I just don't watch them. Because basically it's representative of slime mold. And then, of course, when I think about the story of the Legos, and that you're recanting here, it reminds me of my old marketing company partner who got so addicted to Second Life that he didn't recognize the fact that his wife was becoming an alcoholic. And back in the, early 2000s, guy's knocking down $200,000 a year sitting at home on a computer all day. And, you know, obviously that killed the company because of the problems in the family with the children and the wife and the nature of his work as a webmaster. And I used to watch him work, and I saw the way his mind thought, everything else, and it was quite destructive, I think. It ultimately led me away from this idea that I could honorably earn a living using the Internet. But the main reason I called was to draw your attention to something I saw on Facebook from Black Pine Homestead. Again, Black Pine Homestead. Now, this is a guy that's in his late 30s, early 40s, pretty well put together. He's showing a book that he has in his possession. It's called Practical Projects for the Handyman, which was part of a series called The Boy Mechanic, 1913. And he laments the fact that a lot of so-called engineers and scientists and the like today would be hard-pressed to know even one half of the material contained in a 1913 book series that was targeted for boys and teenagers. But you should look at that, Chris, because nowadays everybody thinks, well, the smart people are the people that are on the computer all day, mm-hmm. or they're making movies,
yeah.
or they're designing new tech products and everything else. But look what this gentleman laments what has been lost in just 100 years. And it's amazing how to make a battery. You know, how to make a folding chair for a campsite. How to make a hydrogen battery. You know, not how to change out a chip.
Which was exactly sort of what I was getting at when I talked about, you know, for example, the Proverbs 31 woman and, you know, what happened through home ec and how there was a time in American society when we valued what you're talking about. I mean, I still have, I forget the title of it. I don't have it right at my fingertips, but the book that my dad had with all of that practical wisdom in it. And we've talked on this broadcast many times about the things that grandparents said to us and great-grandparents, you know, you kids are so smart these days. I only made it through the eighth grade, but, you know, that eighth grade education somehow was enough to help them run a municipality or township. Not to mention their own lives, obviously. So,
yeah, I'm. You know, when I get my just less than $800 a month stipend from Social Security in a couple of days, I'm going to go out and buy that. I mean, it's available on eBay, according to the presenter. Practical Projects for the Handyman. The lead off to the Boy Mechanic series of 1913. I was astonished by all the things I just did not know. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I wasn't a Boy Scout, but I was a Cub Scout. Now, Frederick Blackburn on this network, he was an Eagle Scout. He went through all that. But I dropped out when I was in Cub Scouts. For some reason, I just thought it was just too easy. And, you know, Something told me that being a Boy Scout, going from Cub Scouts to Boy Scouts, was just kid stuff. And I had a similar kind of experience with Little League, you know. I was like you. I think you'd say you mentioned once or twice you took martial arts as a kid. Well, I did too. I was working on my brown belt when I was 11 years old. And, you know, everything changed after I moved back to the States in 1966. The world changed for me. But I thought it was appropriate to bring up in regards to your show today.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that you will look into E.O. Wilson
mm-hmm.
and the things that he was covering. And then, of course, people talk about the public schools being tainted today. Well, it's all the universities, too, because, of course, the hip people are moral relativists because, of course, the only absolute is that there are no absolutes. And
yeah.
So things like the golden rule and morality,
mine makes right.
That's just for suckers and losers.
Yep. Yep.
Thanks, Chris.
We're headed into a break. Thanks, Lark. Much appreciated as always. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Welcome back.
My friend.
Let's dive in real quick so we can get back to the phones here in 2 seconds. So first, point of correction. It was not Sleepless in Seattle. It was When Harry Met Sally. You know what I'm talking about. Enough about that. I'm sure people were screaming, no, it's not Sleepless in Seattle. Also, in a society characterized by moral relativism, what people don't realize is the Nietzschean concept of will to power reigns supreme ultimately. Even in a post-truth world, you know, don't confuse me with the facts. Just give me a persuasive argument. Ultimately, it's will to power, dear comrades. And don't you know, there's nuance in there. In the Wikipedia entry for Will to Power, you read Kraft versus Macht, some of the misconceptions of the will to power, including Nazi appropriation of Nietzsche's philosophy, arise from overlooking Nietzsche's distinction between Kraft, force or strength, and Macht, power or might. Kraft is primordial strength that may be exercised by anything possessing it, while Macht is, within Nietzsche's philosophy, closely tied to sublimation and self-overcoming, conscious channeling of Kraft for creative purposes, which, again, it's right back to what we were talking about, again, with this whole epic of Gilgamesh, hero's journey, Lego movie stuff. What is all of this really all about? And so hopefully you can see the continuity there. Back to the phones. Lynn and Marilyn, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chris. Appreciate it. Boy, I have so much on my mind, but I'd just like to remember Pat from Fort Worth, Texas. And I'll leave all my other comments for another time. If anybody would like to give a donation in memory of Pat, I will give 5% of your donation to RBM plus $1 per donor. So let's say if somebody gave $100, there would be an additional $6, 5% of the $100 plus $1 for you as a donor, or $20, there would be an additional $2. But no amount is too small. And just make sure that you let RBN know it's in memory of Pat, and I'll add to it. And the donation to go to RBN. So you can either do it on the website or call 800-724-2719, extension 3, or send a check or cash and make a note that it's for Pat to RBN Republic Broadcasting, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And I love you, Chris. And I miss Pat so much. And she just added so much to RBN and gave us more to talk about. And I know that she loved RBN. So if anybody is willing, please do that. And if I have a second, I'll just tell you, I actually just caught this show on a Christian local station on Saturday and thought of you. It was by a thing called the ChristianWorldview.org. And the show was, is the Chosen television series a good choice? And about how it's not scriptural. And some guy, there were clips of him interviewing Dallas Jenkins. And stay away from plastic surgery, folks. You could end up looking like the Joker.
Yeah, exactly. Can you say all of that again? The show that it was Saturday?
The website for it is the, where is it? ChristianWorldview.org.
Okay.
Okay. David Wheaton, and the program is the Chosen television series a good choice?
And it's a rhetorical question, obviously.
Yeah, no, it's not a good choice.
No, it is
not. It's not biblical, and they actually say that it's not scriptural.
Yeah. That's a fact.
And when we emasculate men, they can go build a tower.
Yeah. Yikes.
And we'll be old and saggy with faded tattoos. There's nothing like it when you see it. And it's like, what were you thinking?
Amen. Thank
but
you,
I love
Lynn.
The tackle box. Thank you. Yeah. I laughed so hard. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Lynn. Much appreciated. Take care, folks. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.